You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Extreme weather events have dominated the news from the Northern Hemisphere in recent months. Here in New Zealand, the effects of climate change have been most obvious during record-breaking summers, as we experienced last year, and the increasing intensity of flood events being felt nationwide. Agricultural gases are the largest contributor to New Zealand's emissions. At the same time, climate change is predicted to have serious impacts on New Zealand's agricultural productivity, irrigation, water resources, and harvest times. The Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment released research yesterday showing that methane, which contributes 43% to New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions annually, must be part of national emissions cuts. 86% of methane comes from agriculture. I spoke with Adelia Hallett, climate advocate with Forest and Bird, about the significance and implications of this research.
So what this research shows, which we think is really important, is that we absolutely have to reduce methane emissions. Some people have been trying to say that because methane has a shorter life in the atmosphere than a gas like carbon dioxide, then we really don't have to do anything about it. We could just stabilise it at current levels. But what this report shows is that if we want to keep emissions at a level, or keep global warming at a level which is survivable really for us and for nature, then we absolutely have to cut methane emissions. There's no doubt about that. But the point they make, and this is a fair one, is that which part of the economy bears the brunt of the cost will is a political decision. So they, you know, we might decide that we do it all on, you know, a lot more on one area than another area, but the underlying point that this report is unequivocal about is that there's no option to not cut methane.
I guess I'm surprised that that's even a debate still.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah.
The thing is that if we want to keep the world habitable, you know, there's been some work that's come out recently which has talked about a state called Hot House Earth, which is a state that the Earth has been in before. So, and the fear is that, more than a fear, this is actually, you know, scientists looking at this and saying, look, we think that somewhere between 1.5 and 2 degrees of warming, and we're already at 1.1 degree of warming, we could tip into that state. And that's where things like the ocean circulation change, you know, which helped keep our temperatures cooler, and methane comes out of the permafrost, and all these things start, which is known as feedback loops. And so you can end up with what's called runaway climate change, where we just can't stop it. It gets hotter and hotter. And at the moment, we are on target to be, at a current rate of emissions, we're on target for an atmospheric concentration of 1,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide by the end of the century. Now, the last time we had that kind of level of concentration, temperatures in New Zealand were 10 to 15 degrees hotter than they are now. So, you know, that's a massive increase, and we've never lived in a world like that, and neither have our the species in the distribution we've got now. So what I'm really trying to say is, look, we've really got to keep warming to no more than 1.5 degrees. And to do that, we need to make really big cuts in emissions, in all emissions, over the next decade. That's about how much time we've got to really turn this around. And so we can't sort of afford to sit back and say, that one's too hard, we'll play with that now, or we might do a little bit here, but we can't do that. We actually have to do everything now as quickly as we can.
When reports like this are released, does it feel a bit frustrating because ultimately they don't recommend what to do next, or there's no commitment to do something? It's just kind of acknowledging that this is a
I think this report is important because it does lay out that we have to cut methane. The part that is frustrating is that the people with the power to make the decisions, our politicians, our business leaders, and include our farming leaders in that, our sort of, you know, social leaders, we actually as a society should all be saying, it's almost like a war footing, you know, when Second World War, everybody suddenly pulled together. This is bigger than that, believe it or not, and we absolutely need to be doing that. That's the conversation we should be having as a society, is all of us talking about what we need to do. And what gets really frustrating is that we've got so many citizens trying to do things like, you know, reduce their waste, change their light bulbs, take the bus or bike or whatever. But, you know, and those are all important things to do. But we need the big systemic changes. We need the And those big decisions have to be made at the top. You know, you can't take the bus if there's no public transport system, for example, or if, you know, electric cars are too expensive or whatever. So we need the people who lead us to be making those hard calls. And that's the bit that's frustrating. You know, even this government, which has said that, you know, it wants New Zealand to be carbon neutral by 2050. I mean, it acknowledges climate change as a serious problem, which is a big step forward, but it's not going far enough to actually protect us and to protect nature.
It seems to be a pretty huge disconnect between the growing support for wanting to see these changes made, and yet people don't have the options to make individual behavior change, which is such a huge part of the climate change narrative.
Yeah, that's right. And at the moment, it's like the problem's shoved onto the individual. And yes, you know, actually, the biggest thing that we as individuals can do is use our voices. We need to tell our politicians that we expect them to make the hard calls, and we'll back them, and that we will punish them at the ballot box if they don't.
What do you say in response to the debate between farming and agriculture interests and the need to cut these emissions immediately?
Farmers are actually pretty smart, and they've been adaptable in the past when things have changed. So that's kind of the first thing I say. The second thing I say is, look, it's not easy. Nobody's pretending it is, and they are kind of stuck in some systems too, where they might have, you know, high debt to maintain the farm that they've you know, the farming systems that they've got into. So we, you know, dumping it on individual farmers isn't the answer, but we need them as a body to come together. And, you know, they're farmers, but they're actually land users, and so they might be a dairy farmer now, but they need to look at and think about the best way to use that land. It might be in forestry, or it might be in some other farming system. But the key point here is that they are just as vulnerable, if not more vulnerable, than the rest of us, because they absolutely rely on that rain falling, on the sun shining, on the soils being fertile, and, you know, all of that. That they physically live in the physical world, and that is what's going to change. So it's not that they have a choice about this. It's going to change anyway. So it's much better to kind of anticipate those changes and move ahead of them and prevent them being as drastic as they will otherwise be.
Along with that is the idea that we can't separate sectors as being responsible for this. We all have to take it on as a collective, and it's not, as you say, the individual farmers or farmers in general that need to be.
It's kind of like the light bulb thing again. Yes, you know, you and I can change the light bulbs, and that's a good thing to do. And individual farmers can and should do some stuff on their farms, like reducing the use of nitrogen fertilizers, which is creates nitrous oxide, which is a greenhouse gas. So there is some stuff they can be doing now, but actually it's that big change we need as a society, and that requires leadership. And so that's where our government and our farming leaders, you know, Federated Farmers, you know, all the others, Fonterra, all those companies, they need to actually come together. Everybody needs to come together and say, yeah, it's changing. And there are some signs that that's happening, and that's really good to see. My worry is with us, it'll be fast enough and to the degree it needs to be.
Can you talk about how this is, or if it's relevant for the Zero Carbon Bill?
Yes, it is, because the Zero Carbon Bill, which the government has just been through consultation, pre-drafting consultation, there will be another round of consultation, that had three options for defining what zero carbon means. So the government said we'll be carbon neutral by 2050, but it's defined it potentially as three ways. One is what you and I might think that really means, which is net zero by 2050 on all gases. Another one is that it's only on carbon dioxide, which is, you know, one of the greenhouse gases. And the third one is that it will be on only the long-lived gases, which are primarily carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide, but will treat, it used the phrase stabilise methane, the short-lived gases, which is methane, and it didn't define what stabilise means, but that's where people have picked up and said, stabilise, that means we can just stay where we are now and not have any cuts, and that's what this report from the PCE says. Now, that's why this report is so useful, because it says, no, that's not an option. We may be able to stabilise, but not at current levels. It'll have to be be much lower than it is now.
Can you explain a bit why climate change is such an urgent issue for conserving New Zealand's native species?
You know, New Zealand's native species, which are totally different from just about anywhere else in the world, have evolved to live in the conditions that have been predominant. Now, in the past, when the climates have changed, it's been slow, so they've had time to adapt, and also they've been able to physically move because they could just, slowly, move to another part of the country where it's either warmer or colder or more suitable to them. The thing is, this time, it's really fast, so they haven't got that adaptation sort of window, to that time to evolve, but also we've seriously changed the landscape. We've basically cut down all the forests and built motorways and cities and all sorts of things. So if you're a species trying to migrate to another place, it's really hard. How do you cross Auckland? We're already seeing some serious impacts on species. Now, for example, this summer in the Hauraki Gulf, we've seen little blue penguins starving to death because, the temperatures of the waters are changing, and so the fish just swim somewhere else. But if you're a penguin and your nest is on the shore and you've got a baby there to feed, you have to be able to come back there every day. So those penguins are having to swim further and further to get the food, and that uses up their energy. So, it becomes less viable, and we're seeing, with the big storms as well we had this summer, which, probably a result of climate change, we saw really, really high death rate among little blue penguins. That's what will be exacerbated as the climate changes, and really, the impact on species between 1.5 and 2 degrees are huge, the difference in the impact. So if we want New Zealand to retain the things that make us so utterly special, the kiwi, the tuatara, all those different things, and I hope we do, then we absolutely need to keep warming to no more than 1.5 degrees. It is physically possible. The scientists tell us it's physically possible. We're already at 1.1 degrees, so we've got this really small opportunity to do something about it, and that means big cuts in emissions over the next decade.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.